I don't know which is more depressing. Listening to Billie Eilish singing I'm Not Okay, or the fact that Billie Eilish is a musical superstar with millions of Gen Z fans. Now, for some reason, she has tapped into the Gen Z angst, and though her first success was in 2019, she became a megastar producing songs from her own home during the lockdown of 2020. She has a good voice, though certainly not the best. But that's not what's depressing about her success. The issue is that so many of her songs, even the happy songs, wallow in sadness and sorrow. There's just a sad sound permeating even those upbeat songs, which tells me that Gen Z is wallowing in sadness and sorrow. And I find that sad. It just is sad. Yet, as we continue our series, David, a Better Man, we come to a section of his life that rivals the sadness and sorrow of Billie Eilish songs. As a fellow musician, David tapped into a similar spirit of sadness and sorrow because, unlike Billie Eilish, he lived it. He lived it for real. He lived a very sad and sorrowful life for a dozen years. Because as we look tonight at David's A Better Man, we're going to look at a lesson called Forged in Fire, from the Valley of Elah to the Shadow of Death. Basically, from Goliath to Psalm 23. This section of David's life that we're going to be covering tonight covers about a dozen years and covers from 1 Samuel 18 through 1 Samuel 30. So it covers 13 chapters. And so we're not going to be able to read all of it. We're not going to be able to cover all of it by any stretch, but just something that there's a sorrow there and a difficult time for him. In fact, I thought about starting this off or calling this Wasted Days and Wasted Nights from the old song from the 60s and 70s, but you know, y'all know Billie Eilish. How many of you know Wasted Days and Wasted Nights? That's an old song. Anyway, so what we've done so far in looking at David's life, and we'll have three more lessons from his life to finish it up through the end of the year, but we've seen his humble origins as a little boy growing up who was just a shepherd boy out in the middle of nowhere, the eighth son of a relatively insignificant family in a backwoods village, who went from that to be called a man after God's own heart and be anointed as Israel's next king. We saw that previously. Then we saw him go from watching his sheep to killing the giant Goliath as a bold believer, leading to a massive victory over the Philistines. And then our last lesson was about the value of his friendship with Saul's son in a lesson we called You've Got a Friend in Me. And so those are the three things that we've been through so far in our study of David. However, we must not think that David went straight from the pasture to the palace and becoming king, and I think sometimes maybe we do, but there's a long period of time where he is forged in fire, where he has to be living in a difficult life, a difficult time, and this what we call the from the valley of Elah to the shadow of death is a time period defined by four words: harried, hiding, hangry, and hurting. And those are the four words that we're going to use to kind of describe this period. And as I said, there's just so much text here. There's no way we're going to read it all. There's no way we're going to cover everything. And so if we skip over your favorite story, I'm sorry. We're just doing the best we can in the little time that we have tonight. And I'll try to keep it a little less than 40 minutes like I didn't do with this morning's sermon. Let's talk about this word harried first. Harried is the idea of being beset by problems, harassed. And that is certainly the life of David for the dozen years or so that began soon after his recognition as the champion of Israel who defeated Goliath. And then when everywhere Saul sent him to fight against the Philistines, he succeeded and the people loved him and they thought that he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And 1 Samuel 18 verse 7, it says, the women sang as they played, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And so everywhere David went, he succeeded. And so this was a time frame that should have been a glorious period for Saul, for David. But Saul was jealous of him. In fact, the harassment began with an attitude of jealousy with Saul, beginning in verse 8. Right after his defeat, not long after, we don't know exactly how long, but not long after his defeat of Goliath, Saul becomes jealous. Verse 8, then Saul became very angry, for the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. So for that day on, until Saul died, there is a constant harassment of David as Saul is continuing to pursue him and to look at him with jealousy and with fear and concern for the rest of his life. And so this led to constant attempts on his life. Verse 10 says, now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the middle of the house while David was playing his harp with his hand as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. So David stuck there for a little while, and he tried it again. And after the second one, David had to escape and get out. And so this began a period of time where David is constantly being pursued by Saul. There's another attempt later on where David is brought back into a fellowship with Saul, and he's playing for him again, and Saul once again tries to kill him. And then he says, well, if that's not going to work, if you may remember, he said, all right, I'll have the Philistines. So I'll send him out as my leader against the Philistines, and I'll have him go and kill 100 Philistines so that as a dowry for my daughter, Michal, to be his wife. But none of that works. But all of this is the effort of Saul to kill David, either by his own hand or by the Philistines, and then later he just tells his own children and his servants, kill David. In chapter 19, verse 1 says, now Saul told Jonathan his son and all his servants to put David to death. But David now is being harassed. He's being chased. Everywhere he goes, somebody wants to kill him. And this is not going to be good. And so this is where he begins to flee. He has a run for his life. He had to live on the run. Beginning in chapter 19, he flees to Ramah, where Samuel is. Verse 18. Now David fled and escaped and came to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and stayed in Naioth. And so now he goes to Samuel. So Samuel, who is by this time a very old man, probably in his 80s, who knows, maybe even close to 90. He's way on up there in years. David goes to him, pleading his case. Samuel is the one who had anointed Saul first as king and then David, and this was God's judge over the people, and he's having to protect David. But even there, he's not safe because Saul comes to where Samuel is. He finds out about it. He goes there, and God has to interject with divine intervention to prevent Saul from getting there and killing David. This is one of the things where he, in verse 23, he proceeded there to Naioth and Ramah. This is Saul. And the Spirit of God came upon him also, so that he went along prophesying continually until he came to Naioth at Ramah. He also stripped off his clothes, and he too prophesied before Samuel, and lay down naked, and his undergarments, on all that day and all that night. Therefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets? So the only thing that prevented him from killing David now was God stepping in and taking over. So he's on the run. His life is now one where he's just continually running. Chapter 20, verse 1, then David fled from Naioth and Ramah and came and said to Jonathan. So now he's running to another place, and he finds his friend Jonathan, Saul's son, and says, what have I done? What is my iniquity? And this is where we see in chapter 20, if you remember, this last attempt, the last effort to reunite David and Saul, where Jonathan does everything he can to try to get his dad to take David back. But if you recall last time from our study on You've Got a Friend in Me, Saul tries to kill his own son Jonathan. And this is where they part ways, and Jonathan and David has to hide and has to run for his life and hide and begin a series of years of hiding and hiding. But then in chapter 21, we have an event involving David while he's running, while he's harried, while he's harassed, that we see David doing something that is just wrong. a very bad thing happens here. Chapter 21, we see him going to the priest in Nob, where Ahimelech is the high priest, the great-grandson, I think, of Eli, who had been the high priest during when Samuel was a boy. And he lies to him. He just flat out lies to him. And that lie ends up resulting in mass murder. So anytime you hear anybody that tries to take the point where Jesus talks about David and how David received the bread from the priest that he was not supposed to receive and try to equivocate that and try to say, well, Jesus is saying what David, you know, that the priest breaking the law was fine here. That whole situation was messed up. Jesus is making a different point in that text. That whole situation was messed up because when David got there, he lied to him. Verse 1, then David came to Nob to Ahimelech, this is verse 7, 21. When David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came trembling to meet David. So it was already getting out that there was something going on between Saul and David. And so David shows up, and Ahimelech apparently thinks is kind of upset about it, kind of worried about what's going on, but he listens to David. So he came trembling to meet David and said to him, why are you alone and no one with you? Now the true answer would be, Saul's trying to kill me, I'm running for my life. That would have been the truth. But what he said was, David said to Ahimelech the priest, the king has commissioned me with a matter and has said to me, let no one know anything about the matter on which I am sending you and with which I have commissioned you, and I have directed the young man to a certain place. So he lies, first of all, saying he's on a mission from the king, and that there are other young men with him, that he's with a group of soldiers. And so he asks for some bread. And so the priest says, well, all we got here is the holy bread, and they change that out on the Sabbath day, every seventh day, they change it out. So they had the fresh loaves, and they said, we'll give you these 12 old loaves that are a week old, but it's bread. As long as you can tell me that the young men are not ceremonially unclean. And David's lying about the young men, and he says, oh, they're clean, they're fine. Lie upon lie upon lie. And then as a result in chapter 22, they're murdered. Saul comes along and says, why did you conspire with David against me? And has Doeg, an Edomite, by the way, kill them all? And I want you to notice, he doesn't kill just the high priest. He goes on and he kills a whole bunch of other people. Look in chapter, let's look at this more in chapter 22. And in verse 19, it says, and he struck Nob, the city of the priest, with the edge of the sword, both men and women, children and infants, and oxen and donkeys and sheep, and he struck with the edge of a sword. In verse 18, he says he killed 85 men who were among the priests who wore the linen ephod. So don't let anybody try to fool you that what happened between David and Ahimelech was okay, that Jesus was approving of that. It was a massive lie that led to mass murder. Well, that takes us to the next word, hiding. David now goes into hiding. He has to spend everywhere he can. After he lied at Nob, he tried to hide, and of all places, among the enemy. Go back to chapter 21. In chapter 21, he goes down to Gath. Gath is a city of the Philistines. Do you remember? Anybody remember what famous star came from Gath? Anybody remember? Somebody named Goliath? So Goliath of Gath. David goes there to hide, and it's pointed out that, hey, wait a minute, isn't this the guy that they sing about, Saul has killed, slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands? And so David, now he's gone from lying to what he's doing to the priest, now he starts lying to the Philistines because he starts acting like he's lost his mind. He tries to act crazy. Verse 13, so he disguised his insanity before them and acted insanely in their hands, and scribbled on the doors of the gate and let his saliva run down his beard. So he's having to act like he's lost his mind to try to save his life. So he is, and that's what happens when people get harassed and harried. They do things that they should not do. And so he's going to a place that he should not have gone. Instead of trusting God, He's gone to a place he should not have gone. So as a result of that, he has, goes and hides in the cave of Adullam and another place there out in the wilderness. And there, while he's there, he begins to collect supporters. Chapter 22, verses 1 and 2. 1 and 2. He says, so David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam, and his brothers and all his father's household heard of it. They went down there to him, so they weren't safe, and they went down there with him. Verse 2, everyone who was in distress and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was discontented gathered to him, and he became captain over them. And there were about 400 men with him. And so David now is beginning to collect his own personal army, but he is still having to hide from Saul. So he left his family in Moab. Remember, his great-grandmother Ruth was a Moabite. So he goes to the capital of Moab and leaves his family there so that they'll be safe, and goes and hides in the forest in chapter 22, verse 5. And then he goes, and there's a town that's being attacked by the Amalekites. He goes and he rescues them in verse 20 and chapter 22 and verse chapter 23, that is. But while he's there, he goes out from the city and hides in the wilderness outside the city. But then Saul finds out about it, and David has to ask God what to do, because, and so he says, God, is Saul going to come after me? And the priest was, God answered, yes, he is. God, are these people that I rescued going to turn me over to Saul? Yes, they're going to betray you and turn you over to Saul. So he had to run again and hide in another place of wilderness. And this is where we have, I think, one of the funniest stories in this whole thing. I call it coming around the mountain. Chapter 23. And this is down in verse 20, chapter 23 down in verses, verse 26. No, 20, let's see, where am I? Yeah, 21, verse 26. Where did I get that one? No, wait, I got the wrong passage there. 22. Yeah, 23, I knew it was in 23. 23, verse 26. Saul went on one side of the mountain, David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And I just see it in my mind. You know, here's Saul with his men going around one side of the mountain, and then here's David and his men on the other side of the mountain, and they're kind of just going around the circle. They're chasing each other. And then verse 26 continues, David was hurrying to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were surrounding David and his men to seize them. But God intervened. A Philistine attack intervened. Verse 27, a messenger came to Saul saying, hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid on the land. And so he has to go away. But he's leaving him there almost caught, almost at the end of his rope. So he's continuing to be in hiding. And then later, we have the account in chapter 24 where David's hiding in the wilderness and he goes in a cave. Saul's chasing him and Saul goes into the cave and David cuts off a piece of the cloak and had an opportunity to kill him but refused. And that was the first of two opportunities that David had to kill Saul. But he refused because Saul was God's anointed and David wouldn't do it. So even while he's harried, and even though he makes some really bad decisions, he still has a heart after God and is still trying to serve God. And so he does not, even while he's hiding, he doesn't go out and kill Saul like he had the opportunity to do. After this, after Saul, David spared Saul's life, Samuel dies, and then we come to where David was hangry. All right, everybody here, anybody here not know what hangry means? Never heard the phrase? All right, everybody, hangry is the anger you get when you're hungry. All right, it's just taking hungry and angry together. Because as guys, especially guys, as we get hungry, we get a little grouchy. All right, and so David is hangry, and it's the story of David and Nabal, Abigail, and David. You have this event there where David's been living in the wilderness. He's got all these soldiers. He has to feed them. And as he's trying to feed them, he's been protecting the sheep and the flocks of this man named Nabal. And as they protect them, it comes up on sheep shearing time. And so it's a time of celebration, a time of food and festivity. And so they go in and David sends some men to say, you know, we've been watching your sheep. So how about you give us a little food? And Nabal laughs at his men and says, who's this David guy? Who does he think he is? And he mocks him. And so after he mocks him and ridicules him, David becomes hangry. He's hungry. He's hungry, and now he is angry. And in this process, you know, there's a saying, you know, a couple of sayings here. Way to a man's heart is through his stomach, and an army marches on its stomach. Got to have food. These people need to feed, need to eat, but Nabal is not going to help. And so David gets hangry, and Abigail, David, Nabal's wife, wisely steps up, gets the man some food, makes sure his army gets some food, and saves their family. And so then there's a lot more to that story, but we're not going to take the time to spend, I'm not going to spend time on that. It's just a wonderful story of being smart and taking care of a man who is angry. Well, that takes us to the fourth word, last word, hurting. Hurting. And this is toward the end. Toward the end, David has now about 600 men with him, and they're doing everything they can to get by. And he had even joined up with the Philistines again. But an interesting thing about when he joined up with the Philistines this time, Saul wasn't chasing him. Saul wasn't going to have anything. He had no safety with Saul. Saul was going to continue to come after him. And so he had enough power now to kind of form an alliance with the Philistines. And the Philistines are getting ready to go fight. And so when he did that, the Philistines gave him a city. They gave him the city of Ziklag. This is in the city in chapter 27. And this city is going to, the herding part is going to revolve around the city of Ziklag. So in verse 20, chapter 27, verse 1 says, then David said to himself, now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. So he's just kind of given up any hope there in Israel. Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand. So David arose and crossed over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. So now he goes back to Gath. Achish is there as the king. Now he's got 600 men with him, so he has to be respected, unlike when he was there by himself. And he had his wives with him, and so in verse 6, so Achish gave him Ziklag that day, therefore Ziklag belonged to the king of Judah to this day. And so now he has there, and he's there for quite a time. And if you remember the story, what David would do is he'd go off and he'd raid some enemies of Israel, and then come back and tell the king of Achish, that he had raided the Israelites. So again, more deceit was going on, but he was hiding from Saul, acting there in hopes of trying to maintain some kind of life. Well, finally, there's a big battle between Israel and the Philistines. And as the Philistines are getting ready to go up, David gets his 600 men, and he's going to go up with them. And whether he would have fought against the Israelites, I don't know. And the Philistines didn't know either. And so they said, you know what? We don't trust this guy. We don't want him going up with us, because as soon as we get into battle, he'll turn on us and help the Israelites. And so David and his men are sent away, and they go back home, back to Ziklag. And this is where the real pain begins. And David goes through some serious pain that probably seems like, at least up till this time, the worst thing that he's gone through. So in chapter 30, they're going back, and look at verse 1. Then it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had made a raid on the Negev and on Ziklag and had overthrown Ziklag and burned it with fire, and they took captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great, without killing anyone, and carried them off and went their way. So the Amalekites came, captured the city, took everywhere, just plundered it, took everybody away, everything and everyone with them. And I want you to notice the pain that David is feeling with this and his men. Verse 3, when David and his men came to the city, behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive. The worst thing possible that they could think of had happened in their mind. Verse 4, then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until there was no strength in them to weep. They were at rock bottom. That's the kind of pain that I don't think any of us can imagine. I mean, we all have things that bring us pain and sorrow and things that cause us to weep. But not like that. Verse 5, now David's two wives had been taken captive. Ahinoam the Jezreelite, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. But it gets worse. Not only has all of their family been taken away, and all of their stuff, and they're at the rock bottom, now David's men are turning on him. Verse 6, moreover, David was greatly distressed because the people spoke of stoning him. For all the people were embittered, each one because of his sons and his daughters. He's hurting. He's down at the bottom. And his men pile on. Your fault. We're going to make you pay for this. But David was able, fortunately, to calm them. And he calmed them by doing something that shows the smart thing that David did most of the time, or a lot of the time. He went to God. Verse 6, last part. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, please bring me the ephod. Abiathar brought the ephod to David. David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this band? Shall I overtake them? And he said to him, pursue, for you will surely overtake them, and you will surely rescue them all. And so David turned to God and rescued him. In the beginning, in verse 9, he and his 600 men went after them, and they captured, they caught the army, the raiders, recovered all of their family and all of the plunder that the raiders had taken from all the other places, and brought that all back with them, seeking God's instruction. And rescued everyone. Hurting. Well, meanwhile, back at the ranch, meanwhile, back at the ranch, Saul and Jonathan died as Israel was defeated by the Philistines in that battle that they made David leave. That's in chapter 31. And now, finally, that dozen years of the harried, hiding, hangry, hurting David, those years were over. Let's wrap up with some takeaways tonight. First thing is, life will bring sorrow, so survive it. Survive with sorrow. There are people here tonight, and people that are unable to be here tonight, who are living with sorrow and pain and difficulties in their lives. And all of us at times will face sorrow. So survive it. Know that you can get through it. Recognize that there will be sorrow. That sometimes there will be things that will just beat us down and break our hearts. And one of the things that should beat us down and break our hearts is what I talked about this morning in our study this morning. Fellow saints who are not faithful to the Lord, who are losing their hearts. That should break our hearts. That should bring sorrow. We'll survive it. It won't kill us, but it will exhaust us. And we need to be concerned about that and work to survive it. So survive even with sorrow. Second thing is, let's go back to verse 4. One talked about that he survived it. David and the people who were with him lifted their voices and wept until there was no strength in them to weep. When we reach those points in our lives, don't give up. Don't quit. Survive. You can. You can survive. Second point is, survive with honor. We talked earlier about how David deceived Ahimelech, the high priest, and caused a mass murder to take place because he lied to the man. Be honest. Survive with honor. And chapter 30 there, they found, and one of the reasons they were able to catch up and capture the men is they found one of the guys who had been on the raiding party who was just left, probably a slave, just left there, and they picked him up, and they, verse 11, they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread, and he ate, and they provided him water to drink. So this person was suffering, and so they helped him. And as a result of that, he explained to them what had happened, and that he had been brought on this raid. And then in verse 15, David said, "And will you bring me down to this man?" So will you take, you knew the route coming up, will you take me to where they are? And he said to him, "Swear to me by God that you will not kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will bring him down to this man." Now he doesn't say that he swore to him, but it evidently did. Verse 16, "And when he had brought him down, behold, they were spread over all the land, eating, drinking, and dancing, because they had all the because of all the great spoil that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah." And so then they were able to defeat them. So this guy asked him, "Be honest with me, be honest, swear that you'll protect me. Survive with honor." There is no honor in deceit and in lying. Sometimes I think there's an effort nowadays to try to kind of excuse deceit and lying. There's just nothing in it that's honorable. Third thing, survive with God. Seek His will. Go back to chapter 7, chapter 30, verse 7. "Then David said to Abiathar, the priest, bring me the ephod." And verse 8, David inquired of the Lord. You want to get through difficulties in life? You want to get through the problems that you have? Come to God's Word. Seek comfort from God. Seek comfort from God. Seek comfort from God's people, but seek comfort from God and seek His Word. Find out what God wants for you to do and how God wants you to live through whatever it is you're going through, and put your faith and your trust in God. Rely on Him. Seek His will. So, our life will be forged in fire. Go ahead and get your songbooks out. We're going to have a song of invitation. Because our life is going to be forged in fire. And the way it's going to be forged in fire is the fires of temptation. And there may be some difficulties, but not everyone has that. Most of the people here have very good, healthy lives, and everything's going well. But we will go through temptation, no matter how. In fact, the fact that our lives are going so well may be the fiery trial of temptation that we have to face, because that makes us rely on ourselves. Everything's great. I'm doing well. I've got a good job. I'm making good money. Everything's light. I got good health. Everything's great. Do I really need God all that much? Is God all that important in my life? Yeah, He is. He is. We too are forged in the fires of temptation. Sometimes we go from the valley of Elah, which is the side of great victory, to the shadow of death where things fall apart. Through all of that, we have to learn to trust God. So if you got your song book out, turn the song of invitation, this number 278, and we're going to sing that in a moment. And I want you to think about it from this standpoint. God is waiting for you to seek Him. Will you do like David and seek God's will? We can help you be right with God tonight, whatever it may be, whether it's to be baptized into Him, into Christ for the remission of your sins, or to return to God, or just to be encouraged by brethren. We can help you tonight. Be right with God. Please come while we stand and while we sing.